Good Saturday morning to you, everybody. Welcome to another edition we have here at Suspense Radio. I'm your host, John Robb, and we have an extra special big show for you today. 2 hours coming at you, four action-packed guests, starting off with Richard Deutsch, Bobby Cole, Dennis Palumbo, and Leslie Tentler. So we got a lot of information to cover, a lot of things to go over. So it's time to sit back, relax, enjoy, because 2 hours of Suspense Radio starts right now. We got 2 hours action-packed coming for you today. I do want to say one quick thing. I want to give a shout-out. Our thoughts and prayers are going with this person. I wasn't going to say anything. I knew before, but he said it in a newsletter, let everybody know that his latest book is going to be late. It's going to come out February 7th. But Vince Flynn is fighting prostate cancer, and therefore it looks like everything is going to be okay. But I just wanted to say that we are thinking of you, Vince. Take your time. Your health is much before your books. And, Mitch Rapp will have to wait. So you get better, and we will talk with you soon. September 27th was a big day here for our first guest, Richard Deutsch, whose book Half Past Dawn came out. Richard is one of those writers who writes in-your-face thrillers that go from beginning to end. And when you're done, you just feel like you've had no breath. So, Richard, it's great to have you back on. How are you doing today?
I'm terrific, John. Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so, again, Half Past Dawn's coming out. You're a great book a year guy, which is always good to see because a lot of people are starting to be a little bit lazy. Even with the e-books, they can do it much faster, but I'm not quite sure. So, Half Past Dawn, you're talking about, your latest character, Jack Keeler. Can you give us a little background about, what the book's about and how's everything going with it?
It's going great. Half Past Dawn came out September 27th, and it's a standalone novel, which is different than my Thieves series. And it's much like The 13th Hour, which I released in January 2009. But, I actually released more. I generally release a book every about 9 months because I just can't get locked into just writing a series. And I've got all these stories inside me. And, last year I read a newspaper article about a guy who read his own obituary. And I just thought, how great would that be? Imagine if, everyone thought you were dead. And I thought, I could play with that. I wouldn't tell people for days and milk it. But it was a great starting point for a book. And, I sat down and I wrote this story, Half Past Dawn, in about 60 days. And, not knowing where it was going to go and always looking to put these twists and turns. And it's come out great. ABC News, called it one of the best thrillers of the year. I've probably gotten 250 reviews so far, and they've all been, over the top. And I'm not related, really, to any of the reviewers, which is surprising.
And 250, that's a massive amount of reviews.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
That's got to be the most you've ever had for a book, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's great. And, it's so funny because you always say, well, I don't really care about the reviews. But then you get all those reviews. Care about the reviews.
If I'm going to say that is bullshit, you guys do care about the reviews. You don't care about the bad ones, but you sure as hell care about the good ones.
Right. Well, you know how it is because you'll read one bad one, but you can have, 100 good ones. But and I'm sure I haven't gotten a bad one. I know it's going to hit. And when it does, all the other ones will just go away, and I'll be like, downtrodden and depressed for days. So
yeah, I know. That's what happens. You get that one bad one, you're like, oh, and that just ruins your whole, week. And you're like, I just can't get over it. What am I going to do? Yeah, I understand that.
Oh, yeah. You know what's so funny? Sometimes they give a book to, say, a literary fiction person to review it. And I'm like, why would they do that? I said, by the same token, it would be hard for me to, you know, put a review on a literary fiction.
Right.
But, you know, that's life, and that's the game we play, so.
Right. I'm not going to read Ernest Hemingway and give it a good review because I find that stuff boring. I mean, that's just me.
Right.
That's why we always tell our reviewers, who are your favorite authors and what do you like? Because that's the stuff that we're going to give you. We're not going to give you a cozy mystery if you like horror and vice versa. I mean, what's the point of that? So we try to keep all that together, which I think, and, you know, you've seen it, and I think news agencies and whatnot, they're trying to get as much stuff as they can that they're literally just not focusing on what they should be doing. They're trying to throw everything into a bucket, which is a bad thing.
Yeah, you know, that's so true. And, you know, with the changing world of books, you know, between Borders' demise and, you know, a lot of newspapers, you know, not even covering books anymore, everyone's fighting for space. And, you know, as you said, you end up getting, you know, so many people pulling out of one bucket. So,
and, you know, and that is the thing that you just brought up, because you're starting now in a new age. You know, you've had, you know, many books before. This is, what, your ninth. So how has this book different marketing-wise and going forward been from your previous ones, knowing with everything that's been changing out there?
Well, you know what's interesting? It's actually my fifth book. And my first book was released in 2006. And, you know, that's when everything really started to change. But I've been very lucky because I sell internationally. My Thieves series are all international in scope. And the way my thrillers are structured, they really work in any country. So I've been, you know, quite fortunate because I've got those income streams, and I also have sold most of my books to Hollywood. But you're watching this contraction, and what people used to sell, you know, those numbers have dropped. And that doesn't mean that they're not, you know, placing on the New York Times bestseller list or anywhere else, but just the volume is dropping. And
right.
So, you know, we're in an age, it's funny, the other day, they've started this huge push to go after all of these illegal download places for books. And that's become, you know, a large way for people to, you know, pick up some free new release. You know, it could be James Patterson or Vince Flynn or Richard Deutsch. And so you've got these people, you know, operating on lower income. And not that anybody's hearts bleed, but, you know, you want your authors to be able to support themselves so they can continue to, you know, crank out some great stories. And I don't want to see what happened in the music world happen to the book world.
Yeah, and I think that that's it's a little bit different on the fact that, you know, you're talking a 3.5-4 minute song that you can put in a little bit of mega, you know, but it's different when you're trying to take a book and either scan it or however you're getting it. I mean, that has to come straight from the publisher to get a manuscript to be able to throw into a PDF to be able to download it, because otherwise either somebody has to be sitting there typing it or scanning the book or whatnot to be able to get it out there that fast. So
yeah, well, you know, it appears somebody has been cracking the electronic.
Oh, well, then, I mean, that's always the case, too.
You know, and it seems to be a surge. I know I'm with Simon & Schuster, and I know Simon & Schuster and HarperCollins Random House has been doing a big push against it. But, you know, it doesn't diminish the fun from writing, and,
right.
You know, everybody has to deal with the business side, and that's what it is, but, you know, the bottom line is we've just got to get our stories out there, and so many of the authors that you interview, they have a passion for this, and
we
learn and we adapt in the age that we're in.
And so in this book, Half Past Dawn, you said 60 days to write it. I mean, 60 days. I know that I've thrown myself in the ring now, and I'm beginning to write actually two books simultaneously.
Really? Good for you.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm going to be done in those 60 days, so this must have been one of those books that it just came to you, and it almost wrote itself once you started going.
Yeah, it just flowed. You know, I wrote The 13th Hour in 30 days, and when I do these standalones, I build up, you know, a passion for the story. And then when I get to the starting gate, I just kind of go, and I don't look up, and I'll write 2,000 to 3,000 words a day. But I'm coming from, you know, a business world where I was kind of a workaholic, and I'm afraid if I'm not putting out this huge volume that I am slacking, which is a little upside down. But, you know, it's like reading a book. You know, how great is it when you open up a book and you're just, you can't get to the next page quick enough? And so I know that if I'm writing a story that way, the reader's going to read it that way. So that just happens to pour out. But not that some of my other books didn't take 9 months, so.
and then you decided, you know, because you kind of, like you said, you kind of left your series here for this standalone. How much different was it going with the standalone instead of going with the series, you know, that you as an author have to kind of put yourself in? Because a lot of authors, you know, either they're starting to write standalones or they're starting to write series, and they haven't really done the crossover and done both. How has that changed for you?
You know, it's interesting. There's pluses and minuses to each. You know, when you're writing a series, you're constrained by your past books, and so you've got to be very cognizant of the history of your characters. And if you're going to diverge, you know, from that history, you've got to really work it through because you've got a large fan base that's very loyal to the series. When you write a standalone, it's a blank page, and it's great. You can just kind of, you know, do whatever you want with the character as you're going. So you don't have those constraints. But by the same token, you've got to be utterly original. And, you know, to me, when I write a standalone, it really has to be different. It really has to set itself apart from a lot of the books that are out there. So you're questioning, you know, everything that you're doing. And, you know, while it's great fun, you know, it's just got a little bit of stress factor. You know, is the world going to like it? But, you know, it's the sandbox that we're playing in, and we're lucky to be playing in it. So anything that's difficult is far better than, you know, somebody who's, you know, digging a ditch or, you know, working their ass off 18 hours a day.
And when you were writing this, did it ever creep into your mind, and we're talking with Richard Deutsch, talking about the latest book, Half Past Dawn, which is everywhere you can find it in every different country, came out September 27th, is... Did you ever sit there in the middle of this and say, wow, this character could maybe be a crossover with the Thieves theories or maybe bring some of those, you know, things together? Did that ever cross your mind in the middle of this or the beginning or at all?
You know what? It does. And actually, all of my books have little tiny crossovers in that anybody who's read them is going to see little shadows. There's a character that I have in my Thieves series. His name is Paul Bush. And he actually... is in this book for a couple pages, not an important character, you know, but he shows up. The town of Byram Hills is something that is in the Thieves series. It's in the 13th Hour. It's in Half Past Dawn. And, you know, I always give little hints of it because so often when we're writing, we're drawing from our own life. And, you know, our characters come out of us and our locations come out of us. And it's always much easier, you know, to dance around in a little bit of familiarity. So...
Yeah, and that's something that I always felt that was lacking, I think, with some of the authors that they do, is that you have this entire world that you can create, and if you're writing different standalones with different characters, there's, you know, or a series, and you have something different, why not put them all into the same world and kind of, you know, run into each other? You know, driving along the street, you're looking over, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, there's your Bush character or something. To kind of give the illusion, you know, to the readers that this is all one big world and everything's going around simultaneously and you're showing the lives of everybody that's kind of going inside of this world.
That's exactly right. You know, and it's funny, when I wrote my first standalone, 13th Hour, I really wanted to do that and have this, you know, community. You know, what is it, Castle Rock, Stephen King. You know, he's got certain towns that he uses over and over again. And I just, you know, to me, it's a nod to where I live. The town of Byram Hills is actually Armonk, and the high school is named Byram Hills. And I just thought it was an interesting name. But it's a nod to the people who've already been loyal to you, who've already bought in your prior books. But it's also, you know, it makes it fun for the author to try to weave them in. I make, you know, certain characters... you know, I've got a character in the Thieves series, Michael St. Pierre, you know, who is a securities expert, but he's really a thief. And, one of his competitors is in the 13th hour. And, you know, it just kind of, it's fun. You know, it's like a puzzle. And as you know, I love, you know, making my books like puzzles.
Yeah, and that's the good thing, too, which is why it's still one of those things I'm just sitting here thinking 60 days. I mean, you know, that's just one of those amazing things that, you know, it's like Rocky was written over a weekend by Sylvester Stallone.
Doesn't that make you sick? See,
yeah,
and you know what else was?
The
Breakfast Club.
Yeah, he wrote that in like a week.
Yeah. Like,
I know.
Like, what is up with that?
It's just one of those things.
When you do a standalone, for me, and you set it in a world you're familiar with, like setting in Environment Hills, it allows it to flow quicker because the streets, the town, some of the people, when you've got that familiarity, you know, you don't have to go as far. So, you know, that's one of the conveniences.
Now, I'm going to make you think on this question here because I was talking with James Rollins one time and we were in BoucherCon and he was on a panel and someone asked a question that he thought was extremely interesting and made him think. And so my question to you, that same question is, can you think of one sentence in your work that you kind of written that you were like, damn, I can't believe I wrote that because I nailed it. Or one that you were like, I can't believe I did, you know, the ship rocked and rolled and that was just like embarrassing.
There are a lot more of the embarrassing sentences. But, you know, it's funny that you say that. I can't think of a particular sentence, but it will happen where I will have a section. And I'll go back and I'm like, holy shit, who wrote this?
Right.
Who's the person who put this pen to paper? Because it certainly wasn't me. And you try to capture that lightning in a bottle every time. And there was actually my first novel, which was The Thieves of Heaven. I actually have it memorized where I wrote this line. It was like, there's a comfort to love that only those that truly know it feel. It is warm and secure, free of anger and jealousy. It is euphoric and renders one immune to life's cruelty. It is filled with never-ending hope, undying appreciation, and true selflessness. It is the rarest of gifts. And it was near the end of the book that I wrote this, and it was about Michael St. Pierre and his dying wife. And I didn't realize it at the time. That quote has been used in countless wedding ceremonies. It's like,
wow.
It's more like of a Hallmark card, and I'm not a Hallmark card kind of guy. But you write something, you don't know where it comes from.
Uh-huh.
To other people, it's profound. And, you know, to someone else, it's a throwaway line. So the significance of a great sentence to one is, you know, different to another. The interesting thing on Half Past Dawn, the opening line is, you know, something like Half Past Dawn, the world just coming awake or alive. And I didn't have a title for the book. And you know on Microsoft Word, when you click save, it usually grabs the first sentence.
Yeah, first sentence.
And that I saved it like Half Past Dawn, the world just, and it just, you know, flowed from that. When I sent it to my agent, she's like, oh, I love the title. I'm like, I don't have a title. She's like, Half Past Dawn. I'm like, oh, okay, well,
there you go.
So, you know, you don't know how that singular sentence, you know, can reverberate, you know, later on.
And, you know, and it is funny because, you know, we've talked to editors and it's just like, you know, the Super Bowl. A lot of people don't realize how the Super Bowl was named. It was, you know, the guy who was in charge of kind of getting all this together, his daughter came up to him and was like, Daddy, have you seen my Super Bowl? And it just kind of hit him. And it was those little rubber balls, and he goes, the Super Bowl, that's what I'm going to call it. So, you know,
great.
He just has no idea.
Yeah, you don't know. It's like the way Silly Putty or any of these things that are discovered, you know.
Yeah.
It was a
blog I was going to write was for authors, was to say, keep your eyes and ears open at all times, whether it's in the grocery store, the laundromat, the car wash, anywhere you're at, because you never know what you're going to see and hear that you can use.
It's so true. I've got a very, very detailed memory for everything except names and numbers. And my wife and I are very social. We go out a lot. And I absorb everything. And even last night, we were coming home, you know, 2 in the morning. And, all of a sudden we hear this car horn, and there's two cars stop in front of us. I leap out of the car and go running up, and there's a car accident, and there's an 18-year-old kid, and he's just covered in blood. And he was okay, but just that little moment, and, you know, he kept saying, you know, somebody cut me off, but there were no cars, and he knew that he had a bit of a buzz on, and, you know, he was going to be all right, but his parents' car was totaled. Just that little moment, my wife's like, you know what, every time I go somewhere with you, there is something significant. And it's those moments, you know, that just seem to happen. You know, and it's funny. I think they always happen around authors. Authors seem to be present at, you know, amazing events or tragedies. And not that they cause them, but hopefully they absorb them and can spit them out on the paper for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, just think, you know, being a parent myself, all of a sudden, you know, that happens. I go up, and inside the car, the passenger seat, is my son or daughter in there.
Right.
Wow. What would you do?
Yeah.
You know, so, but that's how those things can turn, because all of a sudden you're going, well, God, what if it's my son or daughter, and all of a sudden he's not breathing, or, and, you know, they're bloody. What's going to happen? What am I going to do? And, you know, maybe you look and you see a shadow running across the street in the forest,
right.
And, you know, and all of a sudden there it comes.
Well, you know the author Richard Matheson.
Yeah.
And Richard Matheson wrote, like, the best Twilight Zones, and, you know, he wrote I Am Legend and, you know, everything. And I read an article about him the other day. He's on a plane, and, you know, back in, like, the early 60s, and he is going through clouds, and he's imagining somebody skiing on the clouds. And he's like, well, that's not very scary. And then he's like, what if it was a monster? And that's how he came up with the Twilight Zone episode, The Thing on the Wing, which was also in the Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
And it's just how the mind churns. And we, you know, writers are always these what if people. You know, what if this happened, or what if I turned this way? And that's why when we write, you know, it's so great to just say, you know what, could I turn this 180 degrees? In Half Past Dawn, we kind of veer left and right. And, you know, people, when they hear that this guy reads his own obituary, they say, oh, it's a ghost story. It's not a ghost story. But it's going in a direction that people aren't going to expect. And then it, you know, takes all these multiple turns as they're going and, you know, takes them on kind of an adventure. And that's what we want to do with the reader. You know, we want to make sure that they're not getting the same story over and over again, that they're having fun. And when they close the book, they had a good time and they take something away from it. And hopefully they're still thinking.
Well, I want to remind everybody, we're speaking here with Richard Deutsch. His website is Richard, D-O-E. TSCH.com. The book is Half Past Dawn, along with his Thief series. He's got everything listed on his website. And, you know, you have a blog coming on. You got, you know, something that's linked into, like, cool stuff with some trivia. Are you getting involved here with, you know, any kind of giveaways? You know, do people always ask you, hey, can I get my book signed if I mail it to you? Or things of that nature? You know, are you doing those types of things?
I do. I do everything. You know, I actually have a contest on Half Past Dawn.
And you love Facebook.
Is,
I'll tell you that. You love Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? It's so funny. Facebook has turned into this huge behemoth. And active on that. And, you know, I end up having a lot of friends, you know, that, you know, end up finding you. And you make new ones. And I'll tell you, Twitter is great. I've ended up with about 12,000 Twitter followers because I put out these, you know, writer questions, about 10 of them a day, all these what-if questions. And that kind of has exploded. So while there's been some contraction in the publishing world, we've got all the social media, and it's just another way to get the word out. And it's you know, and it's fun at the same time.
Yeah. Well, Richard, I'll tell you what. It has been such a pleasure again to speak with you on the phone, coming on the radio show. The book is Half Past Dawn. Wish you nothing but success. Stay in touch. You know, we'll be talking back and forth to see what's going on. If you have anything, you know, happening or whatnot that you want us to know about, let us know. We appreciate it.
Hey, John, I appreciate that so much. And, you know, besides RichardDeutsch.com, they can also just go to thethieves.org because Deutsch is always such a mouthful to spell. You know, thethieves.org is always a much easier thing to find out what's going on with all my books. But thanks so much, and I hope everybody gets a chance to check out Half Past Dawn.
Yeah, and that's easy to remember, Half Past Dawn. Don't even have to worry about how to spell it.
Exactly.
All right, well, you have a good one.
Hey, John, you do the same. You take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
So, again, everybody, that was Richard Deutsch with his book Half Past Dawn, and we're going to take a short break here, And we are going to be back with our next guest, Bobby Cole, to be discussing his book. So we will see you here in a second. Listen to this. Hello, everybody, and thanks a lot for coming back. We really appreciate it. We were just speaking here with Richard Deutsch about his book, Half Past Dawn. You can find that at richarddeutsch.com, D-O-E-T-S-C-H.com. Like I said, his book, Half Past Dawn, came out September 27th, available everywhere. Now we're going to be switching over to our next guest here. His book just came out called The Dummy Line. It is his first book. Name is Bobby Cole. Came out with a bang here with this one. So, Bobby, how you doing? Thanks so much for joining us.
No, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Hey, so The Dummy Line, your first book coming out of the gate. Can you tell everybody a little bit about the book? Let me tell everybody. It's readbobbycole.com is your website, and they can find that information too. So, yeah, tell everybody a little bit about how the book came about and you know, your concepts behind it.
Yeah, you know, it's a real interesting story. Most people, the first thing they ask me is, you know, what is a dummy line? And this story is a, you know, it's a suspense thriller. And in the Deep South, and I've come to learn that there are dummy lines all over the country, but way back at the turn of the century when they used to haul timber and out of these big, massive swamps across the country, and especially the South, they would lay railroad tracks and build a railroad track just to haul the timber out. And then when they finished harvesting all the timber, they would take up the railroad tracks, and these long, straight roadbeds were left. And they're when you drive through the South, you'll occasionally see something called a dummy line road, and they're just all over the place. And at the time I wrote this story, I only knew of one. I only knew about one. And since then, I've heard of them all over the country, from Maine to Texas. But the story, I've always been a big reader ever since I was a kid. You know, just starting with Where the Red Fern Grows, and got hooked on books at that point. But I was at a hunting camp in Alabama late one Friday night, and I had a young daughter at the time. She was about 8 years old, and we were in this old camper, just the two of us. And I actually dreamed what later would become chapter 6 in this story. And we were there by ourselves, and I was kind of nervous and about being there and you know, having to take care of her. She was my, you know, my wife had scorned me pretty hard about don't let anything happen to our daughter. And so I guess I went to bed having all that in my mind, and I dreamed this chapter 6, and I woke up, and it was the most realistic event I've ever had, you know, with my eyes closed. And I got up, and I was wringing wet, and I touched her bunk bed, and she was up there asleep, and I went and opened the front door of the camper and let some cool air in and sat down, and I just started thinking about, you know, how real that dream was. And then the basis of it is, you know, we all go to, it's actually kind of a way of life, especially in the South. There's hunting camps all over the country, and people go to them on the weekends, and they get away from their, you know, their work lives that are so busy, and they go to relax, and you show up at these camps, and rarely do you ever think about locking the door. Or, you know, and if you're at a hunting camp, you probably leave your rifle or your shotgun in the truck while you're at the hunting camp. So security is just never an issue. And the story is about a guy who takes his daughter, you know, they're at a hunting camp on a Friday night, and they're asleep, and about midnight he hears somebody drive up, and his immediate thought is it's another club member that's coming to go hunting. And so he gets up, and he's, you know, goes downstairs, he's going to go going to go meet them and let them know, hey, I'm here, and we're going to be, you know, over here, but, you know, just wanting to make sure they know they're there. And it's not another member of the hunting camp. It's some redneck thugs, and they're there to rob the camp. And they see him and get excited, and he sees them and knows he's got that little girl upstairs. And the story is what happens after there. And, I think I had a real edge on believability because of, this dream I had really put a lot of things in motion for me mentally.
And now, is camping and those types of things, you know, I can hear your accent, so I know that you're kind of from the South. So is that something that you used to do all the time, and so that's what made it just that much more easy for you to be able to, you know, write this book? Because they always say if you're going to come out of the chute, you're going to start writing, you should write about what you know, because it makes it that much easier before you start, you know, hopping into a bunch of other different things.
Probably so, and I'm not a camper per se, but, you know, I've grown up in hunting camps ever since I was, you know, big enough to walk, And hunting and fishing camps are all over the country. I'm not sure where all this radio show goes, but I promise you, every state there are folks that are at a hunting camp this weekend, and it's a big part of the way of life where I'm from. A big part. I mean, everybody's got an uncle or a dad or a grandfather or a boyfriend or something that's at a hunting camp right now.
Mm-hmm. And since this is your first book, you never were involved in the publishing part of it and any of the other stuff that was going on. How has that experience been for you to be able to, you know, jump in here and, you know, kind of be part of this, you know, big family of authors and everything that's been going on? How's that changed? How's it been going for you?
Well, it's been a real fun experience. You know, the book originally came out a couple of years ago. There's a lady and her husband in Jackson, Mississippi. She's Jill Connor Brown. She's known as the Sweet Potato Queen. And she's this great, great humorous writer. And her husband is Kyle Jennings. And he and I met up years ago, and he really just fell in love with the story. And they originally published it. So we kind of traveled around the South, you know, selling it out of the back of a pickup truck, so to speak, at bookstores. And about a year ago, Amazon Encore picked it up, and they republished it. And the whole Amazon Encore program, as I have learned, come to learn, is that books that they kind of cherry-pick books that maybe they feel were pretty good but just didn't get a fair shake out there in the marketplace, maybe didn't get exposed to a big number of people. So when Amazon Encore picked it up, I was really excited because I feel like they've got an opportunity to put it in front of a lot of people. And this thing came out Tuesday, and on Kindle it's been number 2 in action and adventure for the last couple of days, and right now it's number 10 in suspense. So I don't know what all that means, but I'm really thrilled that people are getting exposed to it and people are getting to read it.
And and the one thing that now that you're with a publisher and they've kind of picked it up, what have you kind of missed? Because a lot of people think, once I get a publisher and write a book, hey, I'm in, I'm good, I'm good to go. Well, there's a lot more to do to that than just, hey, I'm good to go. What kind of things have you experienced with Amazon Encore that you had no idea even exists in the publishing world until you've gotten now into it?
Well, there hasn't been anything that's taken me by surprise. I mean, I work for a company called Mossy Oak Camo, and we have a division called Mossy Oak Biologic, and so I'm in the marketing department, and I've kind of been around a lot of things and understand how things are promoted, and so I don't think anything really took me by surprise. I'll tell you this, writing the book and editing the book was a lot of fun, but hitting the road and going out and trying to sell a book to people, that's a lot of work. And I love meeting people. Don't take that wrong. But the actual act of going and trying to sell a book is, and especially in the last couple of years, the way the economy's been, it's tough. And the fun for me was writing the story. The fun isn't going out and trying to sell it. But that's part of something that you've got to do. I understand and I recognize that.
Yeah. And do they give you any parameters or anything that they say, we want you to do these certain things or these certain things? Or they give you a lot of tips to help you out? Because you are so new to it?
No, they really hadn't. I'd like to think that, there's just a lot of common sense in what we're doing. But no, there really haven't been any parameters. I'm kind of shooting from the hip here, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, now that you've, got this one, you said that it was out, a couple years ago, but now finally coming out with Amazon Encore, a lot bigger, stage. Are you starting to formulate another book? Anything that's coming up here in the works that you're going to be working on?
Yeah, I've actually got two more. I've got one that is finished, and I've got another one that's just within a few weeks of being finished. When I finished the dummy line, I was having so much fun writing. I mean, it was literally such an enjoyable experience. And at that point, I was very disciplined about writing and writing. Trying to write a few hours or an hour every day. So as soon as I finished with the dummy line, I had another story in mind and I started on it. So I think give me another 6 to 12 months, depending on how fast it takes for the number 2 to come out. But I think there's going to be a second one here, hopefully after the first of the year.
So you're going to be writing this more as a series than bringing back some other characters? Are you going to be doing a standalone, something totally different off the wall? That has nothing related to the characters that were in the dummy line?
Well, I think the second story is going to be a little bit of a continuation. There's a couple of characters in the story, the dummy line, that I don't want to give away the story, but yeah, I think number 2 will probably have a little bit of a continuation to it. It won't be a series. I don't think it would go past the second story, and I picture the third book being a standalone.
But so in your book, The Dummy Line, is there one particular character that while you were writing it, kind of caught your attention that was just either so much fun to write, or you had no idea that it was going to, that he or she was going to kind of be this explosive off of the page. Is there somebody that you kind of did that kind of surprised you that way as the story was going on?
Yeah, you know, actually there were several, and, you know, I've made the comment to several people, and I never said this for the longest time, but people would always ask me if I knew how the story was going to end, and I never did when I was writing it. I never knew how the story was going to end until I got probably 85% finished with it, and it was the strangest thing that when I would sit down at night to write, the characters would then kind of tell me what was going to happen, what they would do, and what how they would react in a certain situation, and they kind of led me to the conclusion. But as I would kind of sit down at night and I would become, the sheriff's name is Ollie, I would learn more about his character and his habits and what he would do. And then there was a deputy named RC that I really, really enjoyed RC a lot. And I would hope that RC could do something in the future. You kind of have to read about him to understand he was just a lot of fun. But these characters, you kind of put your feet in their shoes and it was like having somebody in your head talking to you. And I was very reluctant to tell people that at first, but I've learned since that there's a lot of people that write and that's their style. They listen to their characters in that way, and they may not do an outline and know all the way to the end how it's going to end when they start the book. It kind of the characters kind of take them there. That's how it worked for me.
Yeah, and when you were writing, you know, do you have some kind of different, unique style when you do it? I mean, you know, do you outline before you start? Do you do a lot of notes, you know, going forward? Do you kind of lay out your scenes ahead of time and then kind of do it that way? You know, what kind of is your writing style?
Well, I do. I've got yellow sticky notes all over everything, and I've since gotten a BlackBerry, and I've learned that I can make notes on my BlackBerry, and that works for me. But I don't do an outline, and it drives my wife crazy. She thinks I need to have an outline, but
Let me tell your wife right now. I'll tell your wife right now, that is such a big myth. Do not need an outline. It's a myth. You don't need it. So you go ahead.
I appreciate that. But I've always just felt like the outline would burden me and would put me in a rut and force me to go somewhere that I was predetermined to go, that the story might not necessarily need to go there. So, but I make a lot of notes, and I mean, during the day when I'm doing my job, I might think of something and I'll scratch it down and put it in a file folder, and I try to go back and revisit those, you know, once a week and look at them, and they kind of refresh my memory as to what I was thinking about at that point in time.
Yeah, big lesson right here, and I hope your wife's listening. Outlines are good when you're trying to write a very concise essay for an English person, and they want it to be in this little dinky box, and that's what they want to do. You're going to talk about how the effect of a book is one, whatever it is, but it's a very narrow topic, so you're not allowed to expand out. When you're writing literary fiction like you do, you want your brain to literally explode, so why put yourself in a box on an outline and then not go off of it? So there's no reason to have an outline. You want yourself to just keep exploring with your brain as you keep writing, and that's what you did, and that's what makes your book so much interesting, and that's why people are noticing it, because it doesn't feel scripted.
Well, it definitely wasn't, and I can tell you that it was the oddest thing. You know, I had no formal writing training at all. I wrote it the way that I wanted to tell it, in the way that it made sense to me. But it really was odd. I can remember in the days when I got to about 75,000 or 80,000 words, and it was kind of coming to a conclusion, but I didn't know exactly how it was going to end. And that I had this odd feeling that I should know how it's going to end, but I didn't. And then it was, and I've heard this analogy used other places, so this isn't, I'm borrowing this from somebody, but it was like a ripe apple that fell out of the tree when it was time, and I instantly knew, okay, that's how it's going to end. And then I wrote to that ending, and it seemed to work very well.
Yeah, and that's one of those, you know, letting your brain be open and explore to all the different possibilities that, you know, that could happen. And, you know, and I think that that's something that, you know, that's learned as you do it. Like you said, you've had no more formal writing training. I don't know if that's exactly necessary, but one of the things that maybe you're going to start doing now that you're kind of on the circuit is you're going to start going to maybe some of these events like the Boucher Cons and the Thriller Fest. Do you have any plans to kind of go out? I mean, do your fans kind of email you and want to know where they can meet you or maybe get a copy of the book signed and things like that? Are you starting to get those emails coming in?
Well, I've always got, ever since it came out, I've gotten tons of emails, and I love getting these emails. And I started a Facebook page about 4 or 5 months ago. It's Bobby Cole Books on Facebook, and I get lots of good comments there. I really enjoy them, but I haven't been invited, or I don't have any plans to go to any festivals or any of that stuff. I'd really just kind of like to stay right here in West Point, Mississippi, and just do my thing and not have to travel much, if at all possible.
So you don't want to, you're not too big of having to go out there into, like, you know, like I said, like the Boucher Con, which is just in St. Louis, or Thriller Fest, or Left Coast Crime. So you're not too keen on going into any of those kinds of places?
No, I'm very, very, very introverted. I would love to just be able to stay right here and do, you know, and write, and I've got a really good job here, and a neat little community, and I just love to, I'm a homebody. I can't help it. But given, if I'm asked to go do something, you know, for the sake of, you know, the publisher or whatnot, I will certainly do what I need to do. But I'm not looking for things to go and do. I'd rather write, to be honest
true.
With you. I mean, I think writers write, and I don't necessarily want to. I'm not anything other than just Bobby Cole, and I just, you know, I'm not anything that anybody wants to meet. I'm just a normal guy.
So, saying that you're getting some emails and whatnot, what's kind of the biggest, I guess you want to say, like the most frequently asked questions that you get asked a lot?
Well, that's a fair question. When's the second one coming out? I mean, I get pounded with that. I mean, to the point where I'm, you know, I don't know what to tell people because I don't know a date, and it just infuriates them, you know, when they come, because they want the second, they want a second, the people that have read it want a second story. But the comment that I get the most is that how they started reading it one night, and they, you know, they started it at 9 o'clock at night, and then the next thing you know, they're mad at me because it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're wanting to finish the, and then they stayed up all night long so they could finish it. The book's got a real fast pace, and it's got short chapters. And it lends itself to when you finish one chapter, you got to go to the next chapter and see what's going on. I get that comment a lot, and that really pleases me because that's what I had in my mind. I wanted a real fast page turner it was like a roller coaster ride.
Right, and that's a good thing. So when you get those things, then you kind of, I guess it's kind of more like the justification, or more, you know, that hey, I hit it, I got it, you know. They got what I was trying to say.
Yes, and that's very rewarding. I mean, and you know, honestly, the only reason I wrote the story was because I thought it was a really good, believable story. I don't have any ambitions to be a famous, rich author at all. It's just a really good story, and if people will trust me on that, I think they will be pleasantly surprised. It's a really, really good story.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bobby, I want to thank you so much for coming on and joining us today. Your website, again, is readbobbycole.com, and they can find you. You have the Facebook link that's up there. They can contact you. You got Chapter 6 is on there as a preview, so people can kind of get right into Chapter 6 and read and see what's going on. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Look, I appreciate you having me on here. This has been a lot of fun. I love talking about books, and sounds like you have a great program, and I wish you a lot of luck with it. And please, I would like, if they would go to my Facebook page, I'd appreciate it. And Amazon is the place to buy this thing, the Kindle. I'm frustrated it's at number 2. I would love to see it go to number 1. That would be so exciting.
That's, hey, you know what? Everybody got to go out there, get the book. I'm not really sure what it's priced at. You know, we can kind
$7.99 on the for the Kindle. So
there you go. So $7.99 on the Kindle. The new Kindle Fire comes out November 15th. So now there's not going to be any excuse, so people can go out and buy, and buy ebooks and buy your book.
Hey, I appreciate it. I really thank you for having me on, and I wish you success with your show.
All right. Well, thank you, Bobby. Have a good one.
Okay. Thank you. Now.
All right. So again, everybody, that was author debut author, Bobby Cole. His site is readbobbycole.com. The book is called The Dummy Line. It's, like I said, it's available on Amazon, $7.99. The book is out in Kindle. You can get it. It's got excellent reviews, five-star reviews that is out there. 58 people have reviewed it on Amazon, and it's a five-star review, which means, you know that it's definitely one that you need to pick up. The other stuff that's coming on is, you know, we're going to talk a little bit here about some new releases that came out. One of our good friends, Lise Wheel, her book, Waking Hours, it's something different than she's done before. It's off of her, it's a little bit different from Hand of Fate and Face of Betrayal. She's gone to an East Salem novel, so it's more, and it's a trilogy, so we know that there's going to be three books, which is always a good thing. But what's interesting is that she's kind of gone more into the supernatural side of writing instead of, you know, more of just the straight thriller side, which is always a good thing. To see authors kind of expand themselves into, you know, what's coming on, because her next book, Eyes of Justice, is going to be coming out here in April, which is another one of her Triple Threat series books. So it's good to see, you know, Lisa's definitely taken the, you know, the hand and running with it. Her last book, you know, Heart of Ice, was really good too. So a lot of other things, like we said, just so you know, Killshot by Vince Flynn, if you are a Vince Flynn fan, it is going to be out now in February. He had to push it back because of his bout that he is going on there with cancer, but he is getting better. He will be good, and he is definitely one that you need to keep an eye on, but his book is going to be coming out now in February, Killshot. John Grisham's new book, The Litigators, is going to be coming out here in October 25th, and that's another one we need to take a look at. Another guy, John Sanford, here with another Virgil Flowers novel called Shockwave, just came out on October the 4th. Barry Eisler's book, The Detachment, is running up the charts, and it's another John Rain thriller, and that is out now on the Kindle, and that's another book you need to be to look out for. Dean Koontz is coming out with a new one, 77 Shadow Street. That's going to be in December. And, you know, Dean says all reaching the limits of storytelling, and he's going to do it again here with this latest book called 77 Shadow Street. So it's one that you guys need to go out and check out and see what's going on. Lee Child, his latest Reacher book, The Affair, is out. Lee's done also something that's interesting where he wrote a kind of a short story about Reacher called Second Child. That is out on the Kindle. So, you know, Lee's embracing the fact of, you know, being able to use the Kindle to, you know, do some maybe shorter stories about his character that might not be, you know, good for a long story, but, you know, being able to use the Kindle in order to, you know, bring out more about his character there, you know, Jack Reacher. We're going to have a special show here talking about the radio coming up on October the 30th, and I'm going to do it at 9 o'clock. In the morning is, it's a Sunday, because literally I'm a football guy and I want to watch football at 10 o'clock, so that's why I'm doing it at 9. But what it is, it's our Halloween show, and it's made to listen to on Halloween anyway. And I didn't want to do it on Halloween. I wanted to be able to people to listen to it, you know, on Halloween. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick stories that people are sending in. You can send them in to me here at editor@suspensemagazine.com. I've not made up my mind. I would like to read three. If I could fit four in, I will, depending on the size, but it's going to be an hour long. And I'm just literally going to read the terrifying stories that we get so you can hear them live. Now, I'm going to do my best. I did this last year. It came out really well, so I'm going to try it again and see if I don't, you know, screw anything up. But again, I'm going to be reading these things live, not taped. So it's going to be one of those exciting experiences. Whenever you try to do anything live, you just never know, you know, what's going to happen. But that show is going to be October the 30th and at 9 a.m., but again, you'll be able to listen to it throughout, like you can all of our shows that are archived. But we have some extremely great guests that are going to be coming up here in the future on the radio, and we kind of have our schedule set for the year because of with the holidays and everything else. So our next show is going to be October 29th with John Rector, Jamie Frivoletti, and Tasha Alexander. She's coming back. Then again, that October 30th Halloween show is going to be on at 9 a.m. Then we're going to go to November the 19th, which is John Weissman, A.J. Scuderi, and Stephen Brayton. And they're going to be on November the 19th. December the 10th is a great show with Lisa Black and MJ Rose. December 17th, we have booked right now Christopher Sanford, and we'll have another guest coming up along with Christopher. And then we start getting into next year, where right now we have Raymond Corey, John Land, and Robert Fitzpatrick already booked for next year. But those are going to be the shows here. October 29th is the next one, the Halloween show on the 30th. And then we got November 19th, December 10th, and December 17th, and that will round out the year here of 2011. There's a lot of stuff that we have to get to for the magazine, because our year-end issue in December is the best of 2011. And we've already got the categories done. We sent the stuff out to the reviewers because we want them to go ahead and, you know, let us know which books. We always do this in December, so you can go ahead and order your books for Christmas that you might not know and be able to get some different ones that, you know, you might not be able to heard of. So if you have any suggestions or any books you'd like to nominate, please send them in to editor@suspensemagazine.com and let us know, because once we get the list, we're going to notify everybody, and then it'll be out on right around December 1st, the 1st to the 4th, just depending when we get everything in, and that's going to be a huge show. We're going to try something a little different, where we're going to tell the authors ahead of time and see if they can answer like two or three questions about, you know, their stuff. So you're going to get a lot more author interviews that are going to come into the book or into the magazine for December and the best of. So right now we're going to take a quick short break until we get on our next guest here, which is Dennis Palumbo, and he's going to be coming up shortly right after this. So we'll be right back at you in about 5 minutes.
Life.
welcome back, everybody, to Suspense Radio here, Inside Edition, two-hour show that we got going on. We've been talking here with authors Richard Deutsch that we had on about his book Half Past Dawn. We just had, as you just heard, Bobby Cole talking about his book The Dummy Line. And right now we're going to be bringing on our next guest, but real quick, because I like to cover everything, and to our fans that live in Texas, we get a lot of people that are living in the South and they live in Texas. I'm just sorry to say that Oklahoma is beating the crap out of you right now, 20-3, and so I do apologize for that. But, you know, you always got the show here, and you always got a lot of books to go drown your sorrows. There's always a lot of people that have worse than you if you just read those books. So, you know, just think about that. But our next guest here, Dennis Palumbo, and his website is DennisPalumbo.com, P-A-L-U-M-B-O, and his book is Fever Dream. So, Dennis, I want to thank you for coming. How are you doing?
Real well, John. How are you? And thanks for having me.
Hey, I mean, it's great to be able to talk to this many different authors because there's just, you know, there's so much for us to cover and there's just so little time. So it's great when we're able to have these long extended shows and to be able to bring on, you know, great authors like yourself to talk about, you know, their book. And like we were just talking off air, it comes November 1st. The book
right.
is Fever Dream. It's your second crime novel and it's featuring a psychologist, Daniel Rinaldi.
Rinaldi. Yeah.
And so kind of give everybody a little bit about the background of Daniel, you know, Fever Dream, any kind of stories about, you know, how these things come about.
Well, I'd be happy to. First of all, I really appreciate you having me on the show. I love what you're doing here. I think it's a cool thing. Actually, Fever Dream is the second book in a new series that started last year. The debut book was Mirror Image, and this is the second in the series called Fever Dream. And it features a psychologist named Daniel Rinaldi, who is a trauma expert who consults with the Pittsburgh police. And what he does is he treats the victims of violent crime, you know, people who've been in bank robberies or who've been robbed or, you know, been raped or something horrible has happened to them. And they're so traumatized that the police sort of send them to him to work with because he had his own personal tragedy that he had to recover from. And naturally, being crime novels, he
uh-huh.
ends up getting very involved in solving the problems. And
right.
What makes the book so wonderfully engaging for me is even though I live in Los Angeles, the book is set in Pittsburgh, my hometown. And so I get to write about Pittsburgh, which I think is a really underutilized noir town. You know, I mean, all the mystery
right.
books are in, you know, New York, Chicago, L.A., Miami, New Orleans, you know, pikers. You want to talk about a real, you know, the mean streets. The mean streets are in Pittsburgh, you know, and people don't
and
know
Detroit.
That. So.
Pittsburgh and Detroit. Yeah, I'll give you
Pittsburgh
those.
And Detroit.
I've been to both cities, and I don't want to walk around either one of them kind of at night. Those are some mean streets without a doubt.
Well, the thing that's interesting about Pittsburgh, too, is it's two cities. I mean, when I grew
yeah.
up, I mean, I worked in the steel mills. When I grew up, there were streetcar tracks and smoke covered every building and everybody wore a hat, you know what I mean? And it was very blue collar. And now it's like a pioneering city of nanotechnology and it's very, you know, well endowed by all these rich Mellons and Scaifes and Carnegies. So it's really a kind of tale of two cities. There's kind of a blue collar underclass and then there's a white collar class. So I use that tension between those two parts. Like my hero Daniel Rinaldi, he's the first member of his family to go to college, the first one to have a profession, the first one to wear a jacket and tie, which is true of me. So I use a lot of biographical material in the book. I mean, like me, Daniel is Italian. He loves jazz. He went to the University of Pittsburgh. Unlike me, he's a former amateur boxer. And so he turns out to be a lot braver and more resourceful than I am. Most of the stuff that happens to Daniel or that he gets involved in, I'd go running for the hills. But he's a brave guy. I mean, so vicariously, I get to be brave with him, you know?
And I think that's the great thing. And I think that's the great thing when you're writing a character like that. You're able to explore sides of your conscious self or unconscious self that you're not able to do in real life, but you can do it through your books and through your character.
Yeah, I think that's true. And also, you know, I'm a therapist myself. I mean, I'm a former screenwriter. I don't know if you know this, but I used to write movies and TV. I was a writer-producer on Welcome Back, Kotter, and I co-wrote a movie called My Favorite Year. And, I was a film and TV writer for 17 years before I retired and became a therapist, and I've been one for the last 24. So the book also affords me the opportunity to talk about, mental health industry now. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, in the first book, Mirror Image, for example, much of the action takes place at a private psychiatric clinic, which is based on the one I was an intern at here in L.A., only in my book I transferred it to Penn Hills, you know, a little suburb of Pittsburgh. And in Fever Dream, I get to talk about how you deal with trauma, you know, because the whole thing is built around a bank robbery that goes bloody and horrible, and every hostage is killed except one, which may seem like, you know, like a small thing for a crime novel, except for the fact it's against the backdrop of the district attorney running as a hard law and order man for governor of Pennsylvania. And here he is right on the cusp of the election, and this horrible thing has happened in his town, so how's he going to defend it? And so it gives me an opportunity to write about the mental health industry and, you know, what we're doing nowadays. And lastly, to be honest, I have an issue with how male therapists are portrayed nowadays. You know what I mean? I mean, we used to be good guys. You know, I don't know if your listeners are old enough to remember, but in movies like Now Voyager and Three Faces of Eve in the 30s and 40s and 50s, the therapists were the guys helping people. Now,
right.
You know, how do we get from there to Hannibal Lecter? Now they eat people.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, so if you watch like Law and Order or CSI or any of those shows, the bad guy is as liable to be a male therapist as it is to be some, you know, contract killer. So I thought, well, I want my hero to be a therapist, but I want to kind of resuscitate the image of male therapists, you know. But I also wanted...
And here's something also that is, you know, the small world after all is I have a great aunt that lives in Penn Hills, so I know exactly what you're talking about because we used to stay there going to watch Pittsburgh Panther games play Rutgers every other year because my dad was a Rutgers grad, so there's some more small world.
Oh, my God, how small world is that?
Exactly.
Because, you know, I grew up in the Pittsburgh where, you know, my dad and I would go to the Pirates games at Forbes Field, and I would sit in the right field stand and watch my feeling, the greatest baseball player who ever lived, Roberto Clemente.
Clemente.
And I
knew that
like,
was coming.
I'm sorry?
I said I knew that was coming. All Pirates fans.
You knew that was coming? I know.
Yeah.
This is something I always get into big things with all my colleagues and friends about. But, you know, what can I do? I just love Roberto Clemente, and I would sit in the right field stands and watch him make those basket catches, you know, where the ball would come down and he wouldn't even look at it, and he'd put his glove out sort of perpendicular to his waist and just wait for the ball to fall into it, something that used to just make all the hairs turn gray for all the fans, and he would always catch it.
Yeah.
But anyway,
go ahead, because you were talking about the, kind of the bad press or the bad thing that, you know, male therapists are kind of beginning in today's day and age.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I mean, let's face it, this is a time when all male authority figures are taking it pretty much on the chin. You know, I mean, therapists, I think, are seen a little bit like priests now. You know, they're tarnished by sort of the failed expectations of the public. And so I thought, well, let me make my hero, Daniel Rinaldi, a therapist. And you know, but I also didn't want him to be an Alan Alda therapist, if you knew what I mean. I mean,
yeah.
Daniel is a very prickly, stubborn, angry, funny guy, very anti-authority. And I made him a former amateur boxer, you know, Golden Gloves and Pan Am games and stuff. So we could sort of believe the fact that when he's getting his head pounded in, he would survive it. But, you know, the book also has a lot of suspense and a lot of twists and turns. I'm a big fan of writers like Michael Connelly and Dennis Lehane. And so I wanted it to have both rich characters, which I think the books do have, and very propulsive action, you know, so they're real page turners.
So I want to remind everybody here, we're speaking with Dennis Palumbo, and it's his website is Dennis, and it's palumbo.com. And like you said, the book here, Fever Dream, which comes out November the 1st, is the second in your series, because the first one was Mirror Image. Now, how has your character, Daniel Rinaldi, progressed just from Mirror Image to Fever Dream? Has it been a dramatic change? Has it been more of a subtle thing? As you go forward with him in the series, you're going to see more things? Or did you change him kind of, you know, a little bit more drastic from first book to second book? Are your fans going to notice a big change on that?
No, I think they're going to see subtle changes because of some of the things that I cannot describe that happened to him in Mirror Image. His life really gets turned upside down. And so he's a sort of sadder but wiser version of himself in the second book. And also because he plays such an enormous part in the first book in solving a nationally, ends up being a sort of a national crime, he's gotten a little famous. You know, he's been like on CNN and stuff like that. So now the police department in Pittsburgh sort of use him. You know, they, like the district attorney wants him to endorse him for governor because he has a little bit of name value. You know, so we see two things happening. Number one, he's sort of been, you know, chastened and bruised a little by a lot of the things that happened to him in the first book, including
right.
an intense relationship that he has. And yet in the second book, you know, people actually know who he is, and he's been on the news, and he's been talking to Nancy Grace and all this other stuff. So he's finding his life a little elevated in terms of his public exposure, and he's trying to understand what that means, to deal with that a little bit, which also allows me to comment on the media and plus his uneasy relationship with the police, because he ends up working with two detectives in Mirror Image, and he works with the same two detectives in Fever Dream, both of whom think his job is to sit in his nice cushy office on Forbes Avenue overlooking the Pitt campus and just head shrink the people to come in there. And they don't understand why he keeps being allowed to be involved in investigations, but he is. And in Fever Dream, the only hostage who survives this bloody bank robbery where all these hostages are killed and the bank robbers have escaped, the only hostage who survives is a woman who's so traumatized that the police need him to get information out of her that can help them go catch the guys. So he's involved whether he wants to be or not, much to the chagrin of the police who work with him. So there's a lot of nice personal tension, you know, so it's not this cozy relationship where they love having him around. And I like that, too, because I did some research, and they don't like having guys like that around. They just don't.
Right.
So I think it makes the book sort of more sharp-edged and funny.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that makes the book, I think, interesting is Daniel's best friend, Noah Fry, is a paranoid schizophrenic.
Oh, that's
and
always good to have
that's always
paranoid
good.
Schizophrenics in the book.
Yeah, I mean, when I was an intern working with schizophrenics at the psych hospital, I mean, it wasn't, first of all, that much of a stretch because having worked with network executives and movie producers for 17 years, I had a lot of experience working with psychotics. So
right.
it felt like it was just like a lateral move for me. But
yeah.
The reality was, I met a guy at the hospital who ended up being the model for Noah Fry. He was very funny, very intuitive, and, you know, all the female staffers fell in love with this guy, you know. And so I thought, well, I want Daniel to have a best friend who's like this guy. And, you know, on the other hand, if Noah goes off his meds, he gets crazy. He starts having, you know, delusions and suicidal ideation. And, you know, like he says, you know, look, I go off my meds, I start hanging out with Satan and his minions. And, you know, he said, my job is to stay this side of crazy, you know. And so
and
he
now,
and Dan
and
have
he
a wonderful
off
relationship.
Of anybody? And
I'm
is
sorry?
He based off of any? Is he based off of anybody in real life?
Oh,
Noah,
yeah, that's
or,
what I'm saying.
Okay.
He was based off a patient I worked with for years.
Based off that patient, yeah.
Yeah, and who was very much like the way I portray Noah. Noah
wow.
is a musician because my hero loves jazz and Noah's a jazz pianist, so,
yeah.
You know, but whereas this guy was an elevator repairman who was absolutely insane. I mean, delusional. And he was so casual. I'd go, you know, how are you doing? How was last night? Well, I was watching TV, and, you know, I hate it, you know, because Satan came on the screen, and it was like the third quarter, and I just hate it. I'm watching the fucking game, and Satan comes on the screen. You know, he said, I just hate when that happens, you know. So he was one of those guys, you know, patients at psychiatric facilities fall into two categories. There's the ones who think their hallucinations and delusions are sort of real, and those who understand that other people don't hear and see these things. And they're the ones, I think, in the greatest pain because they're aware of how different they are from other people. You know what I mean?
And,
Noah was one of those. Noah knew
that
everybody else watching this game was not seeing Satan.
Right.
And that was a great source of pain.
And like you mentioned before, you know, you had written screenplays, and, you know, you mentioned Welcome Back, Kotter, which is more of a comedy, and now you've progressed now into, you know, writing, you know, crime fiction, suspense, thriller. How long did it take you in order to kind of get that concept going, to kind of go from screenwriting and then, you know, into books? How long have you been thinking about this until finally, you know, character Daniel Rinaldi just hit and said, now I got the character I want to write?
Well, probably about 30 years. I mean, the thing that's so strange is even when I was on Welcome Back, Kotter, and I wrote the first Love Boat, and I, you know, wrote for the Nancy Walker show, all these shows from the 70s that I'm sure your listeners are all too young to remember.
I love them all. I love all those shows.
I mentioned one time when I was speaking at a conference, I was giving a keynote, and I mentioned that I had written the first episode of Love Boat, and somebody started to chuckle, and I said, look, don't laugh. I just got a 13-cent residual check from the Balkans for that episode.
Right.
So, you know, we're spreading American, you know, cultural values all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
But no, seriously, the thing that was so interesting is the while I was a TV and film writer, I was writing crime short stories. I've always been a huge mystery fan. And so I sold my first short story to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine the same week I got hired on Welcome Back, Kotter. So
wow.
I've been writing mystery short stories for years, you know. And they get published in, you know, like I said, Ellery Queen's, The Strand, Written By. They've been published on and off everywhere. And so I always knew I wanted to write a crime novel and create a series character. And so I think the value of my screenwriting and TV writing career is that there's no fat in the writing, if you know what I mean. I mean, the book really, you know, clip along. The character, you know, they're really defined by, I think, you know, very good dialogue. And I'm not afraid to have my hero be a smartass. So there's some humor, even though the situations are quite dark, particularly Mirror Image, this, you know, because it deals with child abuse and all sorts of stuff, and Fever Dream, which deals with, you know, multiple murder and trauma. But as anyone who's ever worked in the mental health field can tell you, if you don't have a sense of humor, you can't work with your patients because the stuff you're dealing with is so horrible all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you just have to be able to laugh about it.
And that's the one thing that I think a lot of writers struggle with, because, you know, you're writing suspense thrilling, you know, you're writing in your face, you know, murders and things of those natures. But it's that secondary thing is, should I make it a little bit on the more on the romantic side with something, or should I make it more on the comedic side? And it's that what I think that they struggle with, because that's what actually makes the book a whole book. Because, any, you know, you can sit there and write, you know, kind of like, you know, going down and shoot them up and kill them and everything else. But it's that other secondary aspect of the book that is what makes it a whole thing. And I think that that's the essence of, you know, what makes an author write.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I was so pleased when both John Lacroix and Sarah Paretsky in their blurbs for Fever Dream talk about the characters, and that they're like these fully fledged characters. And Lacroix even said it raises it to novelistic heights, you know. And I only quote that so that your listeners can understand that while the books are very suspenseful and somewhat bloody, I'm very interested in what happens to the characters, particularly my lead character, Daniel Rinaldi. You know, I mean, for example, in the first book, one of the secondary characters is the woman, a woman psychiatrist with whom he had a brief affair, and now they're just kind of friends, but they still like each other a lot. And in Fever Dream, she comes to him and says, well, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've met somebody and I'm engaged. And so he has to go, hey, great, you know, I'm happy for you. You're my friend, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is he has mixed feelings about that, you know. She's moving on, and he isn't.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of stuff you don't often see in a gritty, you know, kind of noir-like crime thriller. But real things happen to real people in the midst of noir-like situations. And I like blending the two of those together. As a therapist, I'm interested in relationships and the interaction between people and among people. And if you can do that while you're dodging bullets and looking through clues, so much the better.
Now, and when you're sitting down, and you know, when you're sitting down with a patient and they're telling you, you know, the ins and outs of themselves and this and that, and you're making notes, do you ever like run off to the side and say, okay, that's an excellent premise for a book. I'm remembering this one.
Well, not exactly, though once in a while, you know, I'll be thinking of something or I'll be developing something for a story and I'll think, yeah, I've heard this before. There's an aspect of this. And I realize, oh, my God, 6 years ago, my 3 o'clock told me that a story
yeah.
like that, you know. But I tend not to do that because I really believe that the therapeutic encounter is sacrosanct. What I draw on for Daniel when we see him in session with a patient, which isn't, you know, that much because it's a thriller. You don't want to be sitting in a room talking. But he'll allude to it or we'll have like one chapter with that. It's just to give you the real feeling of what it's like to be in a therapy session. I mean, one of the things I'm proudest of is how many readers of the book say that Daniel Rinaldi really shows you what it's like to be a therapist when he's doing therapy, even though it's, you know, such a 0.1% of what you would see in the book. What he says is what a therapist would really say. And I'm proud of that. I wanted it to really be what would happen if a guy who was actually a therapist got involved in crimes like this, you know. And so I try to make it as accurate as possible. But, no, I don't, you know, when the patient leaves, run to my keyboard and go, okay, I'm going to use this guy's childhood as the childhood for my villain here. No, I don't do that.
I think I would have to. I think that's something I would do. I'm just going to be honest. I'd be like, oh, man, this is such a screwed up story. I got to use it somehow.
Well, let me tell you the funny part about that, John. Most of the stories of my patients lack verisimilitude. Frankly, the reader wouldn't believe it. If I told you some of the childhood experiences of some of my patients, some of the things that have happened to them, no one would believe it. You know what I mean? I mean, you just wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, they always say that the truth is stranger than fiction sometimes.
There is no question. After 24 years as a therapist, I can tell you, and I've read everybody. I've read Thomas Harris. I've read Dennis Lehane. I've read, you know, Patterson, all those guys. Nothing they've written about is stranger than the stuff that I've heard.
Uh-huh. And now when you look forward, and when you start looking forward now with Daniel going forward, how many books do you think you got in? I mean, do you have any idea of how long it's going to go? Do you have something other kind of standalone story from other characters that you want to explore? What do you see kind of the future of your writing going here with your characters progressing down the path?
Right now, you know, I'm very excited about this series and would like it to go on as many books until I fall over dead, I guess. I've done standalone stuff. I have a collection of short stories called From Crime to Crime. From Tall Fellow Press, which is just a collection of mystery short stories. And one of the characters in it is a female psychologist. And the short story it has been developed into a pilot script. And so we're hoping to make that happen on TV maybe. But, you know, but I really like there's so much richness in Daniel's story. And in how many different ways he can get involved in different kinds of things. And so I've already in my mind I know what the plot of the next two novels are, so I'm at least two novels ahead. I haven't worked out all the I never do. I mean, I sort of just write, you know, with just notions in my head. I mean, nobody can believe this, but the truth is when I was writing Mirror Image, I was halfway through the book before I knew who the bad guy was.
That's good.
And so then I had to go back and sort of seed in all the stuff that leads to that conclusion. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You go down a lot of wrong roads when you write that way. But I think it's more interesting this way. I get to hit the keyboard and say to myself, I wonder what's going to happen today. And I like writing like that. I like the surprise of that.
Yeah, I think because I've done the same thing now that I've started to write is that I'm starting to get through, and then I've had to go back and say, okay, I'm going to put a clue in right here because now I know who the bad person's going to be, you know, going forward, and so you're kind of going back and forth, which I think is a good thing. So
I think so too. But, this way, it keeps it more fresh. I mean, you know, John Fowle said a planned world is a dead world, and what I liked about writing Mirror Image and now Fever Dream, I didn't know who the ultimate bad guy was in either book. Until I was hundreds of pages in, because the characters came alive. They started talking to me. And once I sort of knew who they were, I wanted it to be organic, rather than if you start out and say, okay, I'm going to plot out my book, and I know the librarian's going to be the killer.
Right.
So I got to make sure she's in the parking lot at midnight. You know, well, who's the librarian?
Yep.
See, what's her character or what's his character? So I just don't like writing in that kind of planned, outlined way. I think it takes all the fun of discovery out of it.
I gotcha. I'll tell you what, Dennis, it was great having you on. I really appreciate it. You know, everybody's got to go out. The book that we're all talking about here is Fever Dream. Comes out on November the 1st, the second in the Daniel Rinaldi series. The first was Mirror Image. You can find Dennis at Dennis Palumbo, palumbo.com. And you can also check out, like he said, his From Crime to Crime short stories from 2008. And then he also wrote another book, Writing Inside Out, which you can check out too. So, Dennis, thanks so much for joining us, and we appreciate it. Stay in touch with what's going on with Daniel, and we can have you back on, you know, in the future.
Oh, John, I would love to do that. I really enjoyed this interview very, very much.
Great. Well, thank you so much, and you have a joy. And enjoy yourself. It's going to be warm. It's going to be a warm one today in Southern California.
Oh,
so
yeah, and in fact, they say we're getting up into their triple digits Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So
yeah, I don't want to hear that. I don't need that on in October. I need to get it. 70s is good for me.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so you have a good one. Enjoy.
Okay, take care, John.
All right. So again, everybody, that was Dennis Palumbo, and his book is Fever Dream. We're going to be right back here again with our next guest, and that's Leslie Tentler, and she is going to be joining us in about 3 minutes. So until then, guess what we got coming up for you? Welcome back, everybody, to our last segment that we have coming up here on this great two-hour edition of Suspense Radio. We've been able to bring to you with four great authors, capping it off here with a friend of ours, Leslie Tentler. She is back. We had her on not too long ago. She was talking about her book, Midnight Caller, from Mira, and now we're already into book two of her series called Midnight Fear, which is out now. You can find it stores and everywhere you want to look for it. Her website is LeslieTentler.com, T-E-N-T-L-E-R. So we want to welcome back Leslie to the show. How are you doing, Leslie? Thanks for joining us again.
Hi, John. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me again.
So, Midnight Fear coming out. It's out right now. The second book in your series. How's it been going? How's it been going with everything?
I think everything's going really well. I've gotten a lot of good commentary on the second book, and I think, as you may know, each of the three books in this trilogy, they do not have crossover characters, but each book is about a different FBI agent that works for the FBI's violent crimes unit. So this is a brand new story, with the tie-in just being that it's another agent working for this unit.
And I'm going to tell everybody right now, too, you know when thrillers are good. When you go on Leslie's website here and you go right to the homepage, it has it right on there. You can find her on Facebook. 666 people right now, 666, like her page. So when you have that number stuck right on the website, you know that this is something when you're a suspense thriller reader that, you know, you need to dive into.
Oh, thank you. I've noticed that the number is 666, and it has been for several days now. So hopefully I'll get a few more people and get that number off of there.
Yeah, so coming forward here with your, you know, Chasing Evil trilogy, so we know that there's going to be a book three coming up, and you're going to have that out, you know, later in 2012. How has it been for you to go ahead and, you know, go from Midnight Caller, you know, into Midnight Fear? How was that transition able to happen now with your, you know, with your character Caitlin Cahill?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's for me, because this is really my first series of books, and Midnight Caller was my first book. I don't really have anything to compare it to as far as writing, you know, a series type thing where it's the same character. And when Mira wanted me to do a different, you know, sort of a different character in a different setting for each book, I really enjoyed it because, you know, it's kind of allowed me to start over every time and tell a different story with different people, you know, which I think that the series, when you have the same characters, I'm sure that has some challenges as well. The challenge that I've had is I'm not really getting to do, you know, repeat the world building. I'm having to create brand new characters, brand new setting, you know, and a brand new story each time. So there is a little challenge in that, but it's also really fun.
And when you started, I mean, typically when people say, you know, you had a trilogy, you know, you had this in mind, you have the three books that you already knew that you're going to come out with, you kind of had some of the premise, but how has it kind of changed for you? How has it evolved? Has it evolved with a little bit that's been a little bit different than what you first started out with that was kind of captivating to you as you went forward in writing here your latest book, Midnight Fear?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, since Midnight Caller, the book that came out in February, was my debut novel, you know, I really, when I wrote that, I didn't really have a series in mind. I didn't plan to do a trilogy. I just wrote the book. So when Mira approached me and wanted two more, you know, that's definitely been an interesting journey, and it has transitioned in that, in my opinion, I think the stories, you know, are getting a little darker, maybe with the second and the third book. You know,
right.
The first book is dark, but I do think that I've been getting a little darker. You know, I think my pacing has improved, and so, you know, I see changes with every book, and also feel, you know, a little more comfortable doing things that before I was a little hesitant about. And you know, now I feel more comfortable, you know, maybe doing some things that I had a little bit of restraint with on the first book. So it's definitely growing me as a writer as well.
And that's always a good thing when you can understand, you know, how you're growing yourself as a writer, because that just makes your characters, you know, grow that much more also. But you mentioned that you're going a little darker. Now, is there any reason why you went a little darker? Is that something that you wanted to explore? Or, you know, is there anything behind that?
You know, if there is, it's subconscious. It's just something that, you know, I think as I've sort of built a comfort level with, you know, when you're writing, you're kind of putting stuff out there and people are going to read it and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I feel like maybe I had a little more restraint with the first book, and maybe these are, you know, incrementally getting a little bit darker, a little bit bolder. You know, I definitely think that Midnight Fear is kind of a darker story than Midnight Caller was. You know, and I think the character depth is growing as well. So Caitlin Cahill, who is the heroine in book two, is actually my favorite of the three heroines across the three books right now. I really have a lot of admiration for her because of what she goes through in this book.
And being to go darker, because, you know, you're not that kind of a person in real life.
No, I'm not.
You know, does it scare you a little bit to know that your mind can kind of go into those places?
You know, not so much. It's funny because I write dark, but I'm kind of a, you know, scaredy cat in real life. You know, I definitely don't live the type of lifestyles that I write about or anything like that. And I would be, if I had a serial killer after me, I would definitely be a very frightened person. Wouldn't have the bravery that some of my heroines have. But you know, I don't really know where it comes from. I know when I watch television, you know, or read books, I tend to like darker things. So, you know, it's probably not surprising that, you know, I do tend to take a darker bent.
And yeah, and then again, that's another kind of thing that you're exploring as an author. And you know, you're the third book's either finished right now or you're just finishing it up. And you know, like you said, the pacing of that, and people are going to be able to look forward to that one. Is that going to explore a little bit more darkness than you know what you've been able to do here with Midnight Fear?
Right. Well, I think with the third book, the one that will be out in February, the difference is I think you're getting a little more insight into the mind of a killer than you do in the first and second books, because they're really more of a whodunit where you don't really know who the killer is until it's revealed. Right. With the third book, the difference is you kind of know who the killer is from the beginning, and it allows you to explore some of his motivations a little bit more so. So that, to me, is the difference in the third book from the first and second, which is probably why I think it's maybe a little darker.
And now, and how was the events that you went out and did a lot of events, a lot of signings and things like that. Was that something a little bit different from the first book to the second, because you probably had, you know, a lot more fans that were now coming out and things like that? How was all that experience, you know, going here on the tour? And it looks like it just wrapped up on October the 6th.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's my favorite part of it. You know, as a writer, you spend 99.99% of your time sitting in front of a computer by yourself. But, you know, when you get the opportunity to go out and, you know, talk to people, whether it's other writers, whether it's readers, it's always fun. So, you know, the excitement for me has not diminished in, you know, going to a conference and meeting people. The great thing is the first time out, you know, most people had not read the books. They were just there and then they bought the books. But now, you know, especially with the second release, I'm having people who are coming up and saying, you know, I read Midnight Caller, I loved it, I can't wait for the next book. So that's really exciting because you can see that you're starting to grow that readership.
Yeah, and that's something that's going to be going a little bit further now because, you know, now you're going to have to think of life after the trilogy. And have you started to think about life after the trilogy, kind of how you're going to progress yourself as an author moving forward after you're done?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I need to start thinking about. I literally just wrapped up Galleys for the third book, so that was turned in last week. So I haven't had a lot of time to think beyond that, but I know I'm definitely, you know, getting to the point that I need to kind of start thinking about what's next and what do I want to do. So that's kind of next on my list.
And, you know, kind of let people know, because a lot of people don't understand now, when you send those galleys in to your publisher, the editors then kind of go ahead and they can, you know, change things and move things around or think that you're doing, you know, how much rewriting do you think you might have to be doing after you get your notes back from them?
Actually, I think that this is the last step in the process for me because the way that at least, you know, that my editors at Mira have their terminology for it is I have the revisions that came through several months ago, and, you know, those are things that my editor suggests that I might want to, you know, think about or consider. I did those several months ago, so what I received last week and just finished up is the last step prior to printing. They send basically a typeset version of the book to the author just for me to look through it one more time and, you know, make sure there's nothing in there that I want to change. So it's always a little intimidating because it's the last time you get to see it, but, you know, at this point, the book is officially out of my hands and on its way into production.
So, yeah, and those are the things, you know, a lot of people say learn how to rewrite because you're going to have to do a lot of rewriting probably on different things. If you don't rewrite, then the book just won't come together. And is that kind of what your experience was? Was it a little different experience with your second book from Midnight Caller now to Midnight Fear during the whole publishing process? Was that a little different for you?
You know, I haven't had a ton of revisions with any of the books so far. I've had some. Okay. I had more book. The second book, you know, less, and the third book even less. So, you know, I think also that hopefully shows a sign that, you know, I'm getting better because I'm having less changes coming to me. So, you know, really, especially with this third one, the changes were pretty minimal. It's really just the intimidating part is seeing it for the last time and knowing that once you've sent it back and said, I'm done, that's it, and the next time you're going to be seeing it is really the same time the readers are seeing it.
Yeah. And on your website here, and we're talking here with Leslie Tentler, and it's T-E-N-T-L-E-R, and her book that came out, the second book in the series, the Evil Trilogy series, Midnight Fear, is available. But now, I want to know, are you going to update your blog coming up here soon?
I need to.
Yeah.
That's one of the areas that I'm working on, and hopefully, you know, now that I'm kind of beyond all these deadlines, I'll be blogging more regularly because it's been pointed out that I need to update my blog more. right now I'm going on maybe once every few weeks, and my goal is to start doing that a couple of times a week. So definitely you're probably seeing something that's relatively old, but now that the deadlines are beyond me and the book promotion for the second book, I'm going to be focusing on expanding that blog.
And so speaking of promotion, what have you done differently from Midnight Caller to Midnight Fear, maybe marketing-wise, that you know other authors would like to know what kind of worked for you that you've expanded on or things that you stumbled upon that you felt have been good for you?
You know, I really haven't changed what I've been doing between the first and second book. It's just really been a continuation of the things I've been doing. And I'm a big believer in social media. You mentioned my Facebook page earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, I use that a lot to talk to fans and readers and also to keep them updated on news and information. I do run the occasional contest through Facebook as well. So I'm very big on that. I'm on Twitter, and, you know, those to me are two big things I do. And then, you know, the other things are handled by a publicist, you know, who does the typical traditional things like getting news out to the media.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely would encourage any author, you know, to, if they haven't embraced social media yet, to do so. It's you know, it's the one type of publicity that's absolutely free. It doesn't cost you anything. And, you know, I just find that it's such a great community to get in touch with people, you know, whether that's through Goodreads, which I'm on as well, you know, also through your website, as you mentioned, with the blog is another way to do it. One thing I've done across both is do guest blogs. I've had a lot of guest blog opportunities, which is nice because it's a good way to, you know, get your stuff out there on somebody else's site. So hopefully, you know, they'll read it and think, wow, you know, I like that. So they'll come and visit you as well.
And have you found, you know, Facebook is probably your favorite social media site to be able to do those things and to get the word out to as many people as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely Facebook is my favorite. You know, I'm on Twitter, and I do tweets, you know, regularly, but Facebook to me is, it's really more of, has the potential to sort of build that close relationship and community with people. So I really enjoy it, and I have a personal page there, which I let readers join as they want, but I also have my author page, which is where I try to keep the majority of my book-related information.
Now, is there any place, because it's something that we've done, is where, you know, do you have any kind of excerpts and anything that people are able to, you know, read a little bit about the book, you know, before they go ahead and get it? Do you do those types of things with your excerpts and either on your site or on Mira or anyplace else?
Where they are, and I've just really let Mira handle that, is on Amazon. Both of my books that are out right now, if you go to the page on Amazon for each of the books, they have a, you know, look at this book kind of button that, where you click on the graphic and it lets you read the first, you know, I think maybe 10 or 15 pages.
Right.
So I really just kind of leave it at that. I have had in the past, you know, some publications that have asked for excerpts, and I've certainly provided those. But as far as online, you can go to the Amazon page and read the first, you know, chapter or so.
And so what's kind of the, you know, either the funniest kind of questions or the ones that you kind of seem to get all the time from a lot of fans that, you know, they just ask you all the time, you know, about your work or about yourself, you know, share some of those with us.
Sure. Well, one of the things that you get asked a lot, which is a good thing, is that, you know,
you're even laughing as you say this, which is funny. I like that already.
Well, it's funny to me because they'll immediately say, oh, I just read Midnight Fear. When's the next book coming out? And, you know, it's just funny to me because there's so much time and work that goes into putting these together. But I know, you know, when you get excited, I know as a reader I do, I can't wait for that next book. So, you know, that's probably the most common question you get is, when's the next book coming out? That a lot. I've had some people ask me, and they've probably been very wise. They've said, oh, well, you know, like with the first book, Midnight Caller, there was a strong goth element, you know, with vampirism and that kind of stuff. And people said, you know, how are you getting this information? Are you doing research? And I do most of my research online. And they said, oh, are you using anonymous, you know, screen names when you do this? And I'm thinking, no, I'm not. I probably should. So I have had a lot of people ask me, you know, how do you research these things? And if you're going online to certain sites or, you know, getting certain content, are you concerned that, you know, people will think that, you know, you're like that or something if you're on those sites? So it's a good point. And that's the other question I probably get most often.
And do you have a lot of authors now that are kind of maybe like emailing you and asking your advice on either writing or anything else? Are you starting to get those types of questions?
Yeah, sure. I definitely get those types of questions to my website, you know, questions about writing, you know, about how to go about getting published, what are the steps. You get a lot of those, and I hope at some point to add a Q&A to my website that will answer those types of questions for readers, just because I know sometimes when you have an idea for a book but you haven't really started out, it's a little intimidating in terms of knowing how do I start, you know, do I get an agent, do I go directly to a publisher, you know, what should I be doing? So I definitely want to add that, but yeah, I do get a lot of questions like that.
Well, that's always good. I mean, to be able to, you know, sit with them and, or, you know, talk with the public and get yourself out there, because, you know, now once you start getting more and more fans and more people, you start getting pulled in more and more different ways. And that can be exhausting, but it could also be exciting. So, you know, you just kind of have to, I guess, balance that out. And you'll be behind the computer a lot more from now on. That 99.9% is going to rise up just a little bit more of a tick.
To 104%.
It's going to go higher than that, yeah. So, and that's a, and that's a good thing.
Well, and that's the one downside of social media is, you know, you have to be careful because it can definitely take over your life in terms of the time that you're writing. So what I tend to do is allot myself so much time per day to do that type of stuff. And then, you know, after I've hit my, you know, 1 hour that I'm doing it, then I say no more to that. I'm going to, you know, not let myself back on the Internet.
Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of let people know, when you say trilogy, it's kind of a loose-based term that you're writing three books and kind of in the midnight series, that, you know, because it's midnight in your name, but it's three different main characters in three different books. So people can read them out of order. It has nothing to do with that. So people need to know that because they might get scared when they say, "Oh, trilogy, I got to start with the first one." No, you don't have to do that because it's not written that way. And you did that on purpose.
Absolutely. Absolutely, John, you're correct, and that's one of the great things because, you know, I know at a signing I had last week, they ran out of one of the books, the first book they ran out, and, you know, I was telling people, you don't have to have the first book, go ahead and get the second one, and I think a lot of people like that because they're busy, and it's hard to make that big a commitment across three books, so, but each book is set with, you know, as I've said, with different characters and with different settings. I really enjoy researching, you know, areas of the country that interest me and setting books there, so the first one, Midnight Caller, is in New Orleans. The second one, the one that's out now, is in Washington, D.C., and Middleburg, Virginia, where the heroine is running an equine therapy program that's a nonprofit program for children. So, you know, that let me sort of learn a little bit about horses and that kind of thing because I had a big interest in it. And, you know, that's a lot of fun is changing the settings, but you're absolutely right. You can read these in any order you want.
And that said, since you have three heroines, you can kind of almost say, and I don't know if you thought about this, that you're putting all three of them and they're kind of auditioning, because are you thinking about taking one of them and using them going forward with a series of their own? And this is like their audition, per se, to see which one of the three is ready to do that.
Right, and you know, that's a really good point. That's always a possibility. I think the bigger possibility has been with the first book, Midnight Caller. There was actually a secondary character named Annabelle who was the main male character's sister. And I probably had more commentary on her than anyone, people asking me if I'm ever going to write her story, because she apparently really struck a chord with people, and I sort of left her story unfinished. So, you know, not so much the heroines right now. If I had to pick who would I continue with, it would probably be Annabelle for that reason.
Because you do know that you're going to get emails if all of a sudden you start writing a Caitlin Cahill memory, which is your character here in your latest book, Midnight Fear, and, you know, you kind of forget about Rain Summers, who was the one in Midnight Caller, you're going to get emails to say, why the hell did you pick Caitlin and why not Rain? I like her better. What are you doing? So be prepared for those, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing I've learned is there are just all kinds of questions that you're going to get, you know, about characters, about the trilogy itself. So every day surprises me, you know, some of the commentaries and questions that I get from people. But yeah, probably Annabelle from book one is the one that I get most often.
Yeah, and then, you know, when book three comes out, and I'm sure you have it loosely titled as of this time. Do you already have it titled? Midnight?
I do. It's titled Edge of Midnight. And it's set in Jacksonville, Florida.
So you're kind of moving around a little bit, going from different parts of the country. Which, did you go to these certain places and research them, or if you lived there before, you just knew a lot about them anyway?
New Orleans I was more familiar with because I had visited there several times, and my brother-in-law lived in a suburb of New Orleans for a while. So probably out of the three areas, New Orleans was the one that I knew the best. Washington, D.C. and Middleburg, I really did a lot of internet research. I had been there many years ago, but I'm fascinated by horses and the horse country. And so I definitely wanted to set it there. And in that particular book, Caitlin Cahill is a former D.C. socialite who, because of her involvement in a previous murder investigation, has really sought to get out of the spotlight of D.C., and she's moved out to the country. So really a lot of my research focused on Middleburg and D.C. Jacksonville, Florida, I have been there before. And I've been to St. Augustine several times, so there's a couple of scenes set there as well. But a couple of years ago, I was driving through, and this was even before the book deal, that we drove through Jacksonville and on our way to St. Augustine, and I told my husband I wanted to set a book there. And so with the third book, I decided to do that.
Well, that is a neat story. And I'll tell you what, Leslie, it has been such a pleasure to have you on, you know, to talk about your latest book, Midnight Fear. We really appreciate it, and we can't wait for Edge of Midnight now to come out. So we have to stay in touch, and, you know, we'll have you on again to talk about the wrapping up here of, you know, your Chasing Evil trilogy.
Great. I'd love to do that.
All right. Well, you have a good day and enjoy yourself, and we will see you soon.
Thank you, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, again, everybody, that was Leslie Tentler talking about her second book, Midnight Fear, of the Chasing Evil trilogy. You can find out at leslietentler.com. T-E-N-T-L-E-R. Like she says, she's starting to go a little bit more darker, and it's definitely, you know, one of those trilogies that you don't have to start with the first. You can go back and read Midnight Caller. Trilogy is a loosely based word because she does have three different heroines that she's doing with the three different books, and then Edge of Midnight will be coming out there. So going all the way back, I mean, I can't believe it's already been 2 hours and our show is done. Things go really fast, but you know, we had Richard Deutsch on earlier talking about his book, Half Past Dawn. Then we came back with Bobby Cole and his newest book, The Dummy Line, which is actually his debut. And then Dennis Palumbo we just had on, and then Leslie Tentler. So it has been an action-packed show. Again, I want to remind everybody that we're going to have another show next Saturday. And then you can go to find the schedule on suspensemagazine.com. Click on the Suspense Radio button to see who's coming up and what's coming up. Our Halloween show is going to be on October the 30th at 9 a.m., which will then be able to be streamed throughout Halloween. I'm going to be reading short stories. If you have an idea, if you have a story, send it in to me. I'm going to hopefully try to read three of them. It's an hour-long show, so you know, depending on how well I read and how well my voice keeps up, we're going to do all that. So we had it last year. This will be our second annual Halloween show, and that's going to be on October the 30th at 9 a.m. So it's been such an exciting day. I want to tell everybody, all of our guests, thank you so much for coming on. All of our listeners, thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next Saturday here on Suspense Radio. I'm your host, John Robb. And until then, get your butt out of there and start reading. Have a great day, everybody.